When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up and welcome back to the Kinda Funny Screencast, our show where every single week we get together to talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. And you know what? Sometimes music. Every once in a while, someone drops an album that we're like, you know what? We got to talk about it. We got enough people here that are frothing at the bit to get to this, to talk about this album that we were just blessed with this last Friday. And I can't wait to talk to this beautiful group of gentlemen about it. That group, of course, is me, Tim Geddes, and the one and only Roger Picorni.
This shit hard, Tim. This shit hard.
And, of course, we have the new face of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
I grieve different. What's up, Tim?
And rounding out the group from the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 best video game website, GameSpot.com, Timur Hussein.
Let's get this shit.
I love it, man. Of course, today we are talking about Kendrick Lamar's newest album, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. Like I was saying, normally we're covering movie stuff and TV stuff and all that. We're going to continue to do that this week. We got the Halo Season 1 review coming up. Snowbike Mike's been watching that. He's going to give all of his thoughts on all the hot and heavy action going on there. And then we will be returning very soon to the Star Wars realm with Obi-Wan Kenobi starting next week. And then soon after that, we got Miss Marvel coming week after week after week, and we will be doing weekly reviews joined by, can we announce it now?
Yeah.
Tam, he's going to be joining us, so that's going to be a whole lot of fun, and I can't wait for that. Of course, you can get the show on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Screencast, and we'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad-free or become a Patreon producer, you got to go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, Anonymous, Molecule, and Fargo Brady have all done. Today, we're brought to you by Maple Story and Lumen, but I'll tell you all about that later. I want to get right into it. Blessing, what did you think about Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers? And what would you give it on the Kind of Funny scale of 1 to 5?
Starting with me, man. It's always tough to rank music in this stage because the album came out early Friday, right? Like Thursday night. We're recording this on Monday, so we've had about 3 or 4 days of listening. And like, music is one of those things that I really got to sit with for, like, honestly, and I this sounds like exaggerating, but like a year before I truly understand like how I feel about a thing, right? How I'm receiving a thing. That said, right now, if I had to rate it, I would give it a 5 out of 5. I think it is excellent. I think it is on our scale, that is amazing, but I would even go beyond and say that like, it is incredible. It is the continuing of his streak. You know, Kendrick Lamar is an artist that I've loved since he's come around with like Section 80 and then went into Good Kid, Mad City. That was the era that I came into. And it feels like ever since then, he's just released classic after classic after classic, right? From Good Kid, Mad City, going into To Pimp a Butterfly, going into even Damn being the one that for me is kind of the odd one out. I didn't love Damn as much as the other projects. I still loved it, but it felt like more of a stadium album than something as thoughtful as To Pimp a Butterfly or something that felt as classic as Good Kid, Mad City, right? Damn, I'll compare in terms of discography to like almost like Kanye West's Graduation, where Graduation comes out, and that is like hit for hit for hit for hit, right? Like that album is an album that is full of radio singles, and it's one that really blew up because it had Stronger, it had Flashing Lights, it had I Wonder, et cetera, et cetera. And Damn, for me, was kind of a similar thing. With that, I was very curious to see how Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers was going to hit because I didn't know where he could take a sound that would be interesting, right? Like, he's an artist that knows how to have, he knows how to have shit to say, right? He knows how to, like, put together good music. He knows how to, like, go left field, but he went left field already with To Pimp a Butterfly. He went super mainstream with, like, even the Black Panther album, even if you want to talk even beyond Damn, right? Black Panther was, like, an album for the radio, and that was an incredible one, too. And so I've had the question of, like, where do you go from here? And I can't believe that in Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, he's figured it out where, you know, he pulled back and went from being somebody who liked to talk about the culture, liked to talk about politics to some extent, right? But liked to talk about stories from the people around him, to talking about him himself. And this is the most transparent he's been as an artist. This is like the closest slash biggest glimpse we've gotten into who Kendrick Lamar is as a person. And it's a very beautiful journey from beginning to end. I think the thing that struck me upon first listen is, and has been confirmed with multiple listens beyond that, because I listened to this a lot during the weekend, is that like upon first listen, I was like, this feels like a therapy session. This feels like he is just talking to us about mental health, what he's going through, like the various stories of what's led him to the place he's gotten to. And then looking through it through that context and listening to it through that context, it feels confirmed in a lot of ways. Like by the time you get to track 10, which is Count Me Out, I believe it starts off with saying session 10, breakthrough, right? And that's kind of, and he has moments like that throughout the album that kind of contextualize it of like, oh no, this is a session. This is therapy. This is him opening up in a way that he hasn't before because he has gone through therapy, right? And so you get the stories of what he's going through with mental health, what he's going through with addiction and Mother I Sober, what he's going through in terms of coming to terms with his family and in Auntie Diaries and so on and so forth. And even like in Savior, right? Savior is one of my favorite songs on there, and it's him talking about like, hey man, like there is so much pressure that's put on me and that is put on celebrities in general to be the savior, but like I love how it loops back around to the album art in terms of him with his family, holding his baby, wife on the bed, and like him having the I forget what it's called, but like the crown, like the Jesus Christ thorn crown on his head, right? Being like, hey, this is what y'all view me as, but like this is, I'm a human. And like I love that so much of this album is about being human, because we don't get that as much from Kendrick Lamar. But yeah, I absolutely adore this album. I have so much to say, but I'll pass it along because I can keep going. But that's how I feel.
Roger Percorny, what do you think?
I was really surprised by this album because it was, it's so funny, right? Because I've been a fan of the Kendrick Lamar fandom for a while, and the Kendrick Lamar fandom tends to try to get very heady and try to figure out exactly what he's doing in every move set. And I remember seeing when this album was announced and the title of it, people were like trying to figure out what's the concept going to be. You know what I mean? Like, what is it going to be about his two different versions of himself, yada, yada, yada. But it, at its core, it's just him. It's just Kendrick Lamar going to therapy, figuring himself out from start to finish. And that is so funny that for me, like that was the one thing I didn't expect, was for him to break down that wall. Like we always see Kendrick in every single album that he's ever done since Section 80. There is a version of him. There is elements of him that you see that come through. But then for the most part, it is there's this wall of artistry in between it, right? Like he's telling stories of other people, or there's plausible deniability of stories that he's saying, and you're like, that could be him, that could be somebody else. But the fact that he broke down the barrier, and I feel like this album is really brave, like that's the word that I keep on going back to, is that like this almost every one of these songs feel like songs that an artist would write and be like, this is too much, this is too personal, this is something that I can't put this out in the world, but he did in so many different tracks that feel really vulnerable. And for an artist of his caliber to be, you know, openly talking about infidelity, it'd like to openly be talking about his fears and his daddy issues, which is something that I did not expect at all from Kendrick Lamar. It was really incredible. I would say that this album, I've been listening to it a lot, but I haven't warmed up to maybe a 5 out of 5 yet. I think I'm at a 4 out of 5, but again, I'm with Blessing when it comes to like albums take years for me. Like the amount of albums that I actually actively even loved and then hated over years, or vice versa, right? It happens a lot for me. But right now I would confidently say that I'm at a 4 out of 5, and I am pleasantly, I wouldn't say pleasant surprised, but I'm very, very happy that we didn't, you know, I was not a huge fan of Damn. So I was very happy that, you know, this feels more akin to it, just Timon Butterfly. So yeah, I'm very happy with it.
Damn.
Yeah, I find this a really, really interesting album. Firstly, I think I really love it. I've listened to it probably like 10 or 11 times at this point. It's a really fascinating album of like a dichotomy, if you know what I'm saying. I tweeted about this and I've been like really thinking about it, and like we called him King. Like, we called him King Kendrick, we called him King Kunta. I mean, like, he, to a degree, also took on that moniker himself in
even
a lot
Kendrick
of ways.
Kendrick as a name, I believe, translates to King.
Yeah, exactly. And this is an album where he says, no, I'm not that person. Here's who I really am. And the idea of being a king is, you know, you're benevolent, you're almost faultless, and you have perfect judgment, and you have this sway over people, and you have this responsibility of guiding them to the right path and helping this kingdom thrive. And I feel like the last few albums, or he had at least one album where he kind of like embraced that with To Pimp a Butterfly, and now like through his life experiences, it feels like he's reached a point where he's realized, or his expression is, I'm not that person, I'm a lot like you. There's an interesting contrast between what we hoist upon him and what he actually tries to put back on us, and also how he feels about himself. There's a lot of clashes and contrasts. Like the first track, for example, is called United in Grief, and then the refrain is I Grieve Different, as if to say like, hey, we're together in this grief, but also I'm the way I grieve is completely separate from you. And there's a whole load of tracks on this like album that feel very, very similar like that. Like We Cry Together is like, you know, potentially about, you know, the communal expression of a grief of loss. But then you listen to the song and it's just these two people putting up a wall between each other and creating this distinction and pushing each other apart. And it's like really fascinating to see this kind of moment where Kendrick is, it's a kind of, he's putting his inside, his personal feelings out there as a way to try and help instigate a change within a culture and a people, in his own way. And he's doing that instead of by having a title hoisted upon him, but by showing his own flaws and showing how he's grown as a person from it, which makes it feel more genuine and makes it feel more kind of meaningful. And there's a lot of discussion about how he's trying to reach out to his audiences, especially when it comes to stuff like Auntie's Diaries, where I'm sure we'll get into it, but like it's a very intricate, and depending on the way you read it, that even that one track can be taken as problematic, because it's got, you know, misgendering, dead naming, that kind of stuff in there. And the thing that I always come away from it thinking, or I've come away from Kendrick Lamar's albums thinking, but more so in this one, is he's very deliberate. It's very deliberate. So upon listening to that song specifically, like you get this idea that, yes, he's doing these things which are very cancelable. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like on online. And that's exactly how it played out. Like a lot of discussions happen, like where we're like, this sucks. He's doing this, this, and this. But in this album, he's already told us he grieves differently. He's already told us he doesn't give a shit about what other people think. He's going to express how he wants to. And his idea of the way he discusses things are for people who he feels... He frames this album and presents this album in a deliberate way for the people he knows need to hear it in a specific way to be changed by it. It's not for the world at large. Like, this is not for the oglers and onlookers to, like, go to their websites and create reviews for. This is him speaking to people that he's grown up with, that he feels that he can impart his life experiences in a specific way to change the way they think in the same way that he's gone through. And like, it's such a fascinating album because of it. It also feels like the culmination of all of his albums. You know, Good Kid is in here, Damn is in here, To Pimp a Butterfly is in here, Untitled Unmastered is in here, even parts of Section 80 are in here. I think it's like a really, really layered, intricate, deliberate, and thematically, narratively, and sonically rich album that, like Blessing and Roger have said, is only going to age better with time, and I think will continue to deliver for like months, if not years to come, in terms of meaning.
Tim Geddes.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I'm right there with all you guys in terms of like putting a number on it. Like I almost want to not do that just because I feel like it's too early. It would be somewhere between a 4 and a 5, probably leaning more towards the 5, based on the 10 or so listens all the way through that I've had of this album. I think that it is such an important album, specifically at the time that it's coming out, but I think that it is also just important for hip-hop and music in general. Kendrick has done something that very few others have ever done, if anyone really, and that is kind of have a range of like 5 classic back-to-back albums that are so different from each other but are all quintessentially Kendrick. And he has that mainstream commercial appeal while still having that conscious lyricism and really kind of pushing forth stories that matter and feel more than just kind of it's just a club song or it's just a radio song. And I don't even want to just like harp on the more mainstream kind of like anthem-y type things, because I don't think that it's mainstream versus underground. I think that there's been a handful of artists out there, the early Kanye's, the Lupe's, the Tupac's, the Jay-Z's to an extent, and definitely the Kendrick's, that have kind of embraced the platform that they have earned, where they're in this very unique situation where people are listening to their words and really kind of holding on to the messages that they have. And they're able to kind of embed those messages in projects that, for whatever reason, have a je ne sais quoi about them that transcends what other rappers and artists are kind of capable of. And it, all of them have different answers of why that actually works. But I think when you look at Kendrick in particular, it's so interesting, you know, seeing him kind of rise up and in almost a LeBron James type way, where when LeBron was coming up, it was like, oh, it's the next Jordan. Like Kendrick was the next Tupac. And like, imagine that type of pressure being put on you. Like Tupac is one of the, top five names that are going to be brought up no matter what conversation you're having. And Tupac is one of those examples of somebody that represented what rap is and could be, which is it could be Hit 'Em Up, but it could also be all the other
baby.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's like to be able to transcend that line and kind of bounce back and forth at ease on any album at any time and still find the same level of success and get through to the ears and hearts of the people. I think that is Kendrick's greatest talent. And now he's done that five times in different ways. And I think that to Tam's point, in this album, you hear a little bit of all the other albums. I think that's probably the thing that brings me closest to a four on this one, as opposed to it just being a pure ass five, because I think that this album has so much unique things to say and stands on its own with this new voice so well that when it reminds me of the other things, it kind of takes me out of it just a little bit. And I think that that goes back to the double album nature of it. I've never been a fan of double albums, and I feel like there's some things here that upon first 10 listens can kind of get a little bit repetitive without kind of strengthening the arguments. But man, that is like as deep as I can get in terms of criticism. I think that besides touching on some of the things Tam's talking about, but I think you said it really well when it comes to the Anti-Diaries situation, that he is speaking to a certain group of people, and that doesn't make it right or wrong, but I do think it makes it valuable. I think that there's conversation there for sure, but I am so impressed with the intricacies of this and the layers, and the writing is always my favorite thing of Kendrick. I think that he is one of the best writers in the game, and I don't know that there are many that can even come close to touching that. And I think that that's kind of where the real strength of this lies. Like a lot of the production is so technically varied and advanced, and he effortlessly can just fit the mold of any type of beat, whether there's drums, no drums, change ups here and there. It's like it all kind of just starts to feel like one long song, and without the concept of like Good Kid, right? It's not like the following through this narrative story. It doesn't need that, because the concept is, like you guys were talking about, him looking inside a little bit and really kind of being vulnerable in a way that is not corny, which is always hard to kind of pull off, but I think is actually going to have real effects on the youth of today. And like that is the power of this type of music, and it's really rare we get to hear an album that does that, and I think that he's now done it five times, and that I think is one of the more impressive things. And to not lose sight of where it's at, and to really kind of question that with Savior, and the concept of Savior, I think, is throughout this entire album him questioning his place, and should he be the one to say things, but he's gonna say it, but should people be listening to him the way that they are? Like all of that I think is great, because on surface level you can look at it as him kind of trying to remove blame and kind of put himself in a situation where he gets credit for the good things, but if it's bad stuff he's like nah, but like don't look to me for that. But instead it kind of just shows that like we're trying out here, everyone's trying their best, and as long as you are actively trying your best, like there's a lot to be gained. And like, talking about the therapy and all that stuff and the daddy issues, like all of it is just, it's stuff that shouldn't be as novel as it is, but like it's great to hear it done so well here. I want to get to broader conversations for everything, but before we do that, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to MapleStory for sponsoring this episode. Are you tired of being judged based on the way you look? MapleStory is too. Because while it may look cute and cuddly, this is a deeply hardcore MMORPG. MapleStory is full of vast, colorful lands and a ferocious array of towering monsters. And don't get us started about damage. MapleStory will have you dealing billions with each swing of your Fafnir battle cleaver as you battle boss after epic boss, and you can customize your Mapler your way. MapleStory has 40 plus jobs and thousands of weapons, outfits, hats, armor sets, and mounts for you to take on your journey, from the Lionheart battle bracers to vicious lollipop wands. And you know I love a lollipop wand. There's a ton to see and do in this picturesque world, and with 18 years of content to sink your Genesis weapon into, there will always be a new adventure around the corner. MapleStory is ready to go. Are you? You can go to MapleStory.com to check out the game and play for free. That's free, guys. Come on. MapleStory.com. This episode is brought to you by Lumen. If your skincare routine is basically you washing your face in the shower with that one shower gel that you've been using since high school, then it's time to level up the skincare game. Thanks to Lumen, you can drop that bottle of 3-in-1 and start using products that actually take care of your face. With Lumen, you get the highest quality products. All their products aim to help with those stubborn acne scars, under eye dark circles, wrinkles, sun damage, dry skin, oily skin. Gia has been using the charcoal face wash and charcoal face scrub, and she feels so fresh, so clean afterward. She has dry skin, so especially during the winter, it's nice to have that hydration and exfoliation. Also, she's a big fan of the really subtle citrus smell. All you have to do is take a 2-minute quiz on their website, and they'll tell you exactly which routine is best for you based on your skincare needs. Level up your skincare game with Lumen Skin today. You can go to lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. That's lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. lumenskin.com/kindoffunny. Bless, go for it.
Yeah, I think to what you're saying, right? I think there's so much humanization in this album, and it's the most we've ever felt Kendrick treat himself as a human and be a human, right? You talk about how like so much of there are so many good aspects to like the internet and like how we love to call out when like Kendrick's killing it or Kendrick's doing good or Kendrick released an amazing song or an amazing album, yada, yada, yada. But like so much of this album is that, hey, I had daddy issues. Hey, there was infidelity. Hey, I got sex addiction, right? Like, or sex addiction. And like, there's the part, I forget which song it was, but toward the end of the song, I think it was Anti-Diaries, toward the end of Anti-Diaries, where he talks about how like, yeah, like there was the girl that came on stage at a concert and like she was rapping words that she shouldn't have been rapping, right? And that's like one of the, I want to say few Kendrick Lamar viral videos where it's like, ah, Kendrick, why'd you do that? Like, why'd you let her say that? Like, what, like that's one of the few instances where he's publicly been called out in that way. But there's also like times like during the George Floyd protests where a lot of rappers like Kendrick, like J. Cole were being called out for like being silent or not saying enough, right? And like whether or not that was correct or wrong, that could be a whole other conversation. But you know, even J. Cole responded to that in the moment, and it was a bad response.
Yeah, him
making whole track addressing Roger. Was it No Name?
It was No Name. Yeah,
yeah. And it wasn't a great track, right? But Kendrick, in that moment, kind of staying silent and waiting until now to like not necessarily addressing it directly, but addressing the idea of, there's so much that's put on me, and this is how I'm handling it as a human. I think it's so fascinating, and like I think the song Crown encompasses a lot of that, right? I think both Crown and Savior, I think, go hand in hand in terms of like the idea of, people view me as a savior, and I'm not. I'm just human, right? Like I made you think about it, but I can't. I'm not your savior. But then also Crown being that the repetition of, I can't please everybody. I can't please everybody, right? I think it's fascinating to break that apart and then come and look at each of the songs here and how each of the songs here are about being human. Like even We Cry Together, you know, we talk about Kendrick's writing and how layered it can be. We Cry Together is such a good / fascinating song in terms of, one, how it feels so like classic Eminem, both in terms of it feeling like a throwback to Kim, but then also like my mind immediately went to Guilty Conscience, just going back and forth between another artist and like having this story-based thing. I think there's a little bit of both of those in that in this track, and like the amount of times he says fuck you and all this stuff, right? Like feels so Eminem, but you take that and then you take a layering of, like, I firmly believe that this track is also him talking about his relationship to the culture. And so much of this so much of this album is him talking about his relationship to the culture. And like, there, and like, I got to pull up the Rap Genius, but there's so many lines that feel like it's pointing toward that, right? Like, there's even a line in there talking about how, like, I might go fuck with your cousin, right? And that's literally being Baby Keem. Like, yeah. I'm just going to fuck with Baby Keem. You're not going to release the album, Kendrick. Like, shit like that. And even going all the way toward the end of the album, I believe it was, I think it was either Mirror or Mother Eye Sober. There's one of those songs where he mentions, like, he refers to the culture as she slash her, and like he has that transition of like talking about, like, yeah, like she's mad at me, she's yada yada yada, and then talks about how no, it's the culture that I'm talking about, right? Like, so there's so much subtle, like, symbolism and subtle, like, stuff going on in terms of the storytelling of this album, and him again talking about himself, talking about his relationship to the culture, and talking about his flawedness, that I think is so well done, so good, and really rewards repeated listens and analysis.
Yeah, I also think, like, one of the, taking all of that, what Blessing said there, 100% on point, and what makes it more effective is that it's one of those, Kendrick as an artist and this album is clearly very kind of representative and exemplary of the experiences Kendrick has had up until now, beyond what just, you know, he's talking about in this album, or like the previous albums, the stuff that we know about Good Kid, from Good Kid and To Pimp a Butterfly and Damn and that kind of stuff. Because the whole thing about, you know, him being kind of his response to the Black Lives Matter stuff and that kind of business, like, you can see this was a necessary album for him because he went through a few things that kind of changed the way he looked at himself in major ways. The first thing was, in my mind, the control verse, like that whole, when that came out and he said what he said in a way, and had, you know, the industry kind of turn on him. Like, that was him realizing, yo, I'm what is my place in this world? And obviously, the industry being the industry, they saw this dude who's on top of the world and is, like, unquestionably the best artist of our generation, and a lot of egos were hurt by that. Like, in a traditional, most of these rappers know when a rap beef is happening. They also know when someone is dropping bars just to get shit going, and they clearly identified this as a moment where, like, Kendrick is doing something, like, bold and brave and like trying to, you know, bring some heat into the game again. But they didn't just recognize that and then clap back in their own way. They clap back in a way that, like, tore him down, like Jay Electronica getting on a video and being like, Kendrick is my son, and Drake trying to be like, you know, this kind of biz, that kind of business. And then I think that was a big moment for him where he realized, oh, I might be the king, but people are after my crown. Like, a lot of people are after my crown. And then he had the whole, like, the news about him when he was on the news for saying, you know, we hate Popo for sure and all that kind of stuff, and people tore him apart for it. And after that, he kind of vanished. He went recluse for a while, for a really long time, right? Well, we didn't hear from him for like 5 years, something like that. And I feel like him coming back is, and the album that he's put out is a self-reflective album that is a little more kind of personal experience. He's like taken the learnings of what happened to him then and put those into song to show that this is what I am, this is the truth of my place. And I think that it's important that he did that because it shows as an artist that he's always got something to say. And as long as he has that, he's going to be Kendrick Lamar. Because we've had artists that who start off so promising and they become legends, but then you can see the exact moment they've run out of things to say. And Kanye,
yeah, it happens all the time.
It's happened to Kanye, who's one of our favorites. Yeah. And like, I'm even Eminem. The same. Yeah, Eminem. Jay's got it. Like, Jay.
Well, so here's the thing. I want to go off on Jay for a sec here, because, like, yeah, it's like obviously the Kanye and M. I think all of us are
and
some
Pusha
level
T's the same as well. Like, his latest album is great, but he's still doing the cocaine stuff.
Yeah,
same as always.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, we're now on classic album 5 of Kendrick. Like, I believe this is going to be looked back as a classic in the future. And when you look at, like, Kanye, it's like, yeah, sure. Like, I would argue he had at least a 5 album run from the beginning up until Dark Twisted Fantasy, including 808s, that I would be like, these are classics. I feel like even Yeezus is a debate, whatever. But then Eminem, you know, I feel like definitely didn't even make it that far. Like, two or three, probably. But with Jay-Z, I think it's an interesting thing. I think that the comparing Kendrick, especially this album, to any other artist, I think Jay is the most comparable because he had so many classics, right? But then there was also just like a lot of just here's just the pop stuff. But the most interesting moment is when Jay did Kingdom Come, right? And it was old man rap. And people looked at that as Jay not getting it and not speaking for the culture and kind of just being out of it. But he was so ahead of his time with that, that when he came out with American Gangster, it was him kind of playing a character where it was like, all right, this is a movie soundtrack for a movie about mobster shit. So I can go back to doing my cocaine type rap that people want. But like, really, when you look at it now with like 444, that is what this album is most similar to me more than anything I've ever heard, which is like, it's not about the singles. It's not about the like any necessarily one song or another song. It is just a kind of about this entire experience where it is looking inward and it is like much more mature substance matter than we're used to getting from Jay-Z on 444 or from Kendrick on this. And that's, we're talking about two people that are some of the deepest thinkers and artists of our time, but those albums in particular, I think, kind of just take it a different level because it does look inward a bit at in their place, not just as a human being, but as a celebrity in the world.
Yeah, I think like seeing Kendrick navigate what he's going to talk about and figuring out like what his next album is going to be, I think is so fascinating, especially comparing it to the people we're talking about. Because when I look at this album, I do think Kanye a lot, specifically in three different albums. I think the double album thing in terms of the structure of it and how when you hit that halfway point, it is that turn to from addressing your mental health to liberation. For me, that reminds me a lot of Ye and Kids See Ghosts, which was like a back-to-back album release for Kanye, right? It was back in 2018, I would say, where it was Kanye, his solo project, Ye, that, and then the week later, it was him in Kid Cudi releasing Kids See Ghosts. And in the Ye album, Ye felt so chaotic and disjointed and so just expressive of I am struggling. Like literally the album cover is I forget exactly what it says, but it's something along the lines of like I am bipolar, it's awesome, or something like that, right? And like it is him just purely expressing the chaos of his mental health. But then Kids See Ghosts felt so much like him coming to terms with addressing it and him coming to terms with, okay, cool, now this is the full circle of healing and like feeling free, right? Like there's literally a song on there called Free, right? And Sam and Kid Cudi kind of going back and forth on these similar mental issues. I think this reminds me of those a bit in that sense, but then also reminds me of 808s and Heartbreak in terms of the turn, not in terms of the sound, because I think sound wise like that's what made 808s feel so different, but in terms of subject matter, going from Graduation, which I see damn is Kendrick's Graduation, into 808s, which was about emotion, which was about him losing his mother, losing his relationships, like, you know, singing, purely being emotional throughout an album. That, for me, feels like this, but done in a way that, you know, isn't done amidst the hurt, right? I think the hurt took place during the 5 years that Kendrick disappeared, and now we're seeing him do almost like the healing version of 808s and Heartbreak, where it is, hey, I've gone to therapy, I've talked through it, and here are stories about me, right? Here are stories about my auntie, right? Or my uncle, or like that story, right? Here's stories about what you talked about, mother Eyes Sober, right? The sex addiction, the infidelity, right? Here's me coming to terms with what I'm talking about when We Cry Together in terms of the struggle of a relationship, but then also the struggle of my relationship with the culture. I think, like, it's so fascinating to look at this album through this lens. And I think it also uplifts like the writing and creativity as well. Like another thing I noticed about the album is like, you know, upon my early listens, I couldn't help but to notice how much Kodak Black was on this album. Yeah. And I couldn't help but to ask why. And like, that was
I'm
the thing.
I'm still asking.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing I was struggling with so hard. And like, because Kodak Black is an artist that like, one, like, I don't love Kodak Black. I think he's like, in terms of his music he puts out, I think he's like very like whatever. I do know that there are a lot of people out there, like younger people out there, that probably really fuck with Kodak Black heavy. But I think the thing that jumped out at me was like, yo, this is the guy that's like hated. A lot of people just cannot stand Kodak Black because he was charged with sexual assault, right? And like going like on one of my later listens through of the album, right, I got to Mother Eyes Sober and I got toward the end where he's talking about like, hey, a lot of rappers end up lashing out in this way because they were treated this way growing up. And I like couldn't help but to like in that moment think about Kodak Black and be like, oh shit, is this what he's doing? And not to say that this is like a good decision or a bad decision, but like even that I think had that sort of level of like, no, I want Kodak Black on this thing because he's exactly the person who I'm addressing toward the end of the album when I'm talking about like what other rappers are going through, or people that are in a similar place as me are going to be in a similar place as me as they progress in their career, right? Like, it's very fascinating to see the choices he makes in that way. And I think, like TM said, I think so much of it is deliberate. It's not necessarily, every choice isn't necessarily a choice that is loved by me, but it is one that each choice I think does have some level of like meaning and thought put into it.
Yeah.
It's like DaBaby on Kanye stuff recently, right? It's like the same idea, but it's just from somebody that I think they're both deliberate and both being done for specific reasons. I just think that I have more faith that Kendrick's reasons are good. But yeah, I still have some questions.
Roger. I'm not a huge fan of this for many reasons, but I think specifically because I understand where he's going with it, but also it kind of ignores also the hurt that Kodak Black has brought into the world. Mm. And like, it focuses on, sure, this is maybe the reason why, but like he's turned out this way, but it also, it completely ignores the fact that it makes it almost seem like it's okay. And I know that's not what he's saying, but that's a very easy conclusion. Yeah, exactly. And also, I don't think it works necessarily with the concept of it, right? Like this is a very personal album in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like you can run a really clear through line from the first track of him kind of being messy and not really going from jumping from a lot of different topics to the ending of Choosing Himself. And I think the inclusion of Kodak Black is it kind of distracts from a lot of it. And I think I actually appreciated Baby Keem's placement on the album a lot more than Kodak Black. And I think he could have kind of taken that place of Kodak Black very easily. But I understand he's doing it very deliberately. I just don't agree with the artistic choice. And I don't think it's leading to a good place. Yeah.
Maybe he's good, though. As well, Baby Keem on his
absolutely.
I forget what hook it was. I think it might have been Savior. Yeah. But like, he killed it on the hook.
I fucking love it.
Are you happy for me? That one.
So good.
So like this, I still have the Kodak Black like thing in my head, and I don't really understand it. And when I got through listening to it a bunch, it reminded me of another rapper who like, I don't know, like there was a beef between J. Cole and Lil Pump for a while. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And like Lil Pump is like just mouthing off about, you know, and like the Kodak Black stuff is way more serious, but I think like the response that J. Cole had, which was like, I'm going to find this fool, I'm going to sit down with him and I'm going to talk to him. And there's a video of like J. Cole just sitting down and with Lil Pump and being like, what is your problem? And then it's like a therapy session for Lil Pump where like he goes through it and talks about his life and that kind of stuff. And by the end of it, they're like, he's like figured out something about himself. And J. Cole has done this thing where he's like, you know, the elder kind of like guidance figure for this other person, and helped him understand some shit for himself. And the whole thing was like, J. Cole at that time was like, we don't want to abandon these people who have like done these things, and we try and help, you know, kind of resolve their issues and also like rehabilitate him to a degree. So the best I could come up with was like Kendrick trying not to abandon kind of, you know, these kind of figures in the industry and in the scene that are known and could do damage, but would do more damage if they are abandoned. And like, that's the best I could come up with. And it's also kind of like harkens back to that. I think it was on Damn where he had that track where it was just a meltdown about how, you know, his friend's brother died and the best he could give was a FaceTime call. And it's like, I feel like Kendrick was dealing with some real, like, I've abandoned the people that I came up with, or I abandoned the people who I could guide to a better place. And that's the best I could come up with, having Kodak Black on this album. But as you said, like, Baby Keem is a way better.
Yeah, Baby Keem is a way better feature, and also I think does a better job. Like, none of the Kodak Black parts spoke to me necessarily, but I do think that is it. I do think it is him like trying to reach toward the quote-unquote newer artists, even though Kodak Black has been around for like 5 years or so, but trying to reach out specifically to some of the ones that are known to be problematic and trying to recontextualize their voice. And like, I can't say whether it's good or not. Like, maybe time will tell. Maybe I'll sit with it and figure out where I land with it. But I do think it's him being deliberate in that way. But also, speaking of features, I do want to give a shout out to Taylor Page.
Oh my god!
On We Cry Together, because like, I had to look it up. I was like, who is Taylor? And when I looked it up, I saw that she was the girl from Zola.
Yeah,
she is not like, she killed it, and she's not even like in the rap game. I was like, oh my god, she's delivering. No, like, she's a veteran, and she's keeping up with Kendrick Lamar, and like, and delivering in such an expert way.
She's not only rapping, she's acting at the same time, which is 100%. Not easy to do. Like the vocal cracks and like the shifts in tone, like that is
the flow.
The flow to it, like that is clearly Kendrick has found a performer, not a rapper, not an actor, but someone that can do both. And like I was like, I want her album. Like, yeah. What's going on? Like, give me her album. Yeah, but yeah, she's incredible. Also
shout out to Kendrick's performance in that one too.
Yes, like, exactly.
I referenced Eminem, but like Eminem, back in the day, I think had one of the best deliveries in the game, specifically Marshall Mathers and what was the other one? Slim Shady LP era Eminem. I think his delivery during that era is like unmatched to this day, and Kendrick took that, and I do think like he pushed it further, right? Like him going back and forth to Taylor and then keeping similar energies while, like, again, flowing on cadence, like having all these different inflections, their voice breaking, all this stuff, like fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I love that song because the more I listened to it, the more I realized that what Kendrick's character, I guess, or Kendrick is saying is kind of bullshit comparatively to what she's saying. It just is meaningless and it's completely deflective. And that is something that, like, when you first listen to it, it just feels very raw and you're just like, fuck, this is wild. But then as you listen to it, like, fuck, like everything he's saying is just bullshit. And that was a really incredible revelation.
There's a moment in that song where he talks about, like, is this what relationships are? And the interesting thing about that is, like, that is what a relationship is if you haven't had the life experiences to truly understand what a real relationship is like. And it's the idea that you speak to any relationship, that you speak to any therapist about, like, being in a relationship, and the first thing they'll tell you if you get into an argument and talk about it is, like, were you listening to them when you were arguing, or were you just waiting for your turn to say what you needed to say? And that's what this is. It's like Kendrick in this argument just waiting his turn to retort to what is being said. He's not listening to Taylor, what she's saying. So, like, it's that same dichotomy where he's throwing himself under the bus, as he does many times on this album, so that hopefully the people listening take away some sort of enlightenment and some message out of it, which I think is, like, just such a crazy and cool thing to do.
It is, man. And I think that he does such a good job of, again, it's like when you just listen to that song, it's like anybody can hear it for the first time and take something away from it. I don't necessarily think that's going to be a positive thing, but like that song is an attention grabber, right? Like people are going to hear that and it's like, okay, you're going to pay attention at least long enough to understand what's going on. But I think that then in classic Kendrick fashion, there's that layer deeper and then even more and more that contextually this song within the album is him using a lot of his bullshit, like Roger's talking about, to kind of put a lot of different concepts and ideas out there, where it's not just addressing his thoughts or the perception of his thoughts about one or two subjects. There's like 15 different things that him and his partner kind of get into throughout all of this. And I feel like it backs up another one of the themes of, like, okay, if one of the theme of this album is like looking in and therapy and all that stuff, but then also the idea of him not necessarily being king and this not being a savior and all that stuff, but still having to be that, like, perform that position, there's the idea of the tap dancing, right? And it's like, don't tap dance around this, like, get it, dive right in. And I love that you hear the tap dancing throughout the album. Like, it, one of my least favorite things in music history is Watch the Throne, how it had that, like, musical interlude thing in between a couple of the songs. And to this day, I have no understanding to the rhyme and reason of why that interlude played before certain songs, because they weren't connected. None of it seemed to make sense. Whereas with this, like, the constant tap dancing throughout it all, and, like, just different phrases that he uses throughout different songs weave it all together to just be this one long narrative that isn't, again, it's not a story. It's not like from A to B plot wise, but it's more just like thematically and in concept. And I think that this song is so much deeper than just the first surface level listen of what it is, of like, oh, it's Kim, but it's a modern Kim in a different way with a different perspective. It's like, I actually think that this is a crux of this album in a lot of ways, of kind of just being really raw and saying a lot of the concepts and idea in a very loud, obnoxious way. But it's kind of being able to do that and to look at how stupid a lot of these arguments sound when you're like, there are things that not maybe all of us have said, but we can apply the song to things we have said in those times and be like, oh, we need to look within ourselves a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to I think another huge concept of this album is how he has treated women throughout his entire life, and this is a great and very real, pretty much like a full on example of how a situation like this probably has went out in his life. And I really I one of the lines that kind of makes me laugh in that song is him just she's like very raw and talking about stuff, and then his retort is this is why R&B women don't feature on each other's songs. And then she's just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like it's this level of almost gaslighting of just like bringing in random things that somewhat relate that aren't getting to the crux of looking inwards, and that's the whole
meaning of the song. I actually think there's more meaning to that, and I don't think I'm the right person to unpack it because it involves like taking a couple of like meme drawing conclusions about what someone is saying about another group of people. But there is the idea that, you know, it is mentioned a few times in that song, in the actual like around that actual line, the idea that females don't support each other in the same way that men don't support females. You know what I mean? Like if your own, you know, gender is looking to tear you down, like why do you expect the opposite to do that? And it's a line of thinking that you can understand coming from a person with the mentality that version of Kendrick has, where he's selfish and is like, well, if you don't have I hold no value in you, your friends hold no value in you, you holding your friends no value in your other women, so why should I respect women? That kind of thing. And it's a horrible like thought process, but I think he did that on purpose, like I said, deliberately, because it's a sentiment that's probably commonly held around him and he's surfacing it.
And I think it goes back to like what he calls right the last five years, like the 1900 days, whatever he says, right? Like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a sentiment that like he held at one point in the last 5 years while struggling, while going through arguments, right? And it's so fun picking apart this album in terms of like what the different meanings can be, but this song especially, because like again, going back to the idea that like this is about the relationship with maybe his partner or his relationship with the culture, right? Like the way the song starts off is with a line that says, "This is what the world sounds like," and then the beat kicks in, which also shout out to the beat. This was produced at least co-produced by Alchemist. And it is a fantastic beat, but then it goes into like you know, I swear I'm tired of these emotional ass, ungrateful ass bitches, unstable ass, confrontational dumb ass bitches, right? You want to bring a dude down even when I'm trying to do right. We could go our separate ways now, you can move on with your life. Reading that and like hearing that and like listening to it in like different lens, like it works in so many different contexts, and it's so impressive. And even the R&B line, right? Like that's one that I was trying to understand in the same way. And I think it works in exactly the way that Tam's talking about, right? But it's also fun figuring out like, all right, but does this work if he's talking about this, right? Like, does R&B features impact rap features in a certain way that can come back to the culture? Like it is such a, and like it is, The fact that I can look through it in that lens and not feel like it is like too much of a stress or too much of a stretch is such a compliment to Kendrick's writing, because like I do think in so many cases his writing backs that up, and so yeah, shout out to that.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm excited to see people kind of unpack is the actual like character progression, if you know what I mean, and intentionality progression in this album, because like I've started to like think about it, but like the actual, you know how it was where people said, oh, if you listen to Damn straight top to bottom and then bottom to top, it's like got different meanings. Like the way I'm looking at it, I'm trying to look at the album or trying to see if there's any connections, because like you start off with United in Grief and he's telling people like, I grieve differently. And then the idea of N95 and masks and that kind of stuff, and like him shedding the idea, his kind of like his old personality, the king, like getting rid of that, because he's talking about throwing away loads of things. And then he goes into talking about, you know, the way he, the things that he no longer gives a shit about, people, the way they think and that kind of stuff. So there's almost like this table setting that happens in the album in like the first half before he gets to the second half, where he just lays out his dirty laundry, for want of a better phrase. But it's almost like this ritualistic approach where he feels like, I'm going to get my shit straight. These are the things I need to say and lay the foundations for, so I can then say the important things and feel good about the thing that I've constructed and not feel any regret and feel like I can step away, turn my back on this album and the things I've said, and feel good that I expressed the things I wanted to on my terms. I made the qualifications that I needed to make in the way that I wanted to, and it stands as its own now.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that's backed up even with just the first song, with United in Grief being the opener of the album. I love that song. And I think that even just like it alone is probably one of the stronger single songs that I think you don't need the context of the whole album to really appreciate, because it is that table setting that you're talking about. I love the idea of it starting off with him being like, I grieved your friend. And then by the end of it, it's like, we all grieved your friend. Like, I'm not unique in this. Like, we are all shared that we're all the different, and we all have to deal with like the fucked up world and all that stuff. But I also like the subject matter of the different verses in the song, where it's kind of like him being like, I was what I was supposed to be. You know, I was this famous rapper, and you know, I was 28, had 20 million in taxes, and talking about the infinity pools that he's never even swam in. And throughout the album, there's like multiple references to cars that he would buy and then immediately want to buy another car. And he says that in like different ways. And I think that it is that growing up period of like, cool, the fun's over of being a celebrity. Now the responsibility's starting to set in. And now I'm able to kind of stop and look back and reflect on the choices I made and why did I make them? Did I make them for me, or did I make them for others? And for that song to then go into N95 and talk about shedding a lot of that stuff, it's like, it is, I think, such a strong opening to this album to really kind of be like, look, I've spent the last 5 years looking back, and you know, I kind of didn't like the guy that I was, and I know y'all liked him a lot, but like, I didn't. Really,
and what really, really like drives that point home is the actual way that song starts, United in Grief, which is, I hope you find some peace of mind in this time. And it's like clearly him saying, I've tried to figure this out, and this is what I've come to. I hope you find something that is able to bring you to this place too, which is like fascinating.
Going back to what Tim brought before in terms of like some of the interludes and some of the stuff that the album does to link itself together, I didn't realize that comes up twice, at least twice in the album, the I Hope You Find Some Peace of Mind. It comes up again toward the very end of the album, and I didn't realize it until I played the album on shuffle, and then I heard it twice in a row, and I was like, oh, wait a second, oh, shit. But I do think, you know, speaking on what Tam brought up in terms of like the character progression in the album, for me, I started to notice some of the character progression when I started viewing each track as a therapy session, right? Like, again, once you get to track 10, which is the first track on album 2 or disc 2, Count Me Out, you know, he says, you know, the voiceover says like session 10 breakthrough. And once I started looking at it as like the, all right, let's start at the beginning, right? United in Grief feels like it's setting stuff up. And as you go, right, you get to Recry Together. You get to like the midpoint, right, being Count Me Out and him talking about how like, yeah, I love when you count me out. I love when you don't believe me. I love when you like, well, again, going back to Kendrick Lamar and him as a writer, I do think that like him saying, I love when you count me out is him also talking to himself. He did the same thing on the song You, Intimate Butterfly, where he's talking about like, he's talking about how much he hates you, right? And he's talking about himself. He hates himself, all this stuff, right? Like, that's how I read I Love When You Count Me Out. And you know, I think it's interesting when you take it there. But then you go into Crown, right? You can't please everybody. And as you go, like, again, looking at each of these in sessions, it makes sense once you get to the final track. And he's in the refrain on there is, I chose me, I'm sorry, right? Him being like, fuck everything else, like, fuck the fame, fuck the responsibility, I'm choosing my own mental health, my own family. You know, I think for me so far, that is the character progression. Yeah. And I think it's such a powerful,
for better or worse. Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like, it's him taking responsibility that he's doing things the way that he thinks is right, even though we are all looking at it in some ways like, I think you did this wrong, and I think that's wrong, and you shouldn't have said that. And like, you know, the dead naming and stuff, it's like, I feel like there was a responsibility that he should have to handle that correctly, and I don't think he did. Like, I think that he handled it incorrectly. But I think that's like, back to Tam's point, it's all deliberate, and it's all him kind of going back to like, hey, and I'm choosing me, I'm choosing this over it. So,
and I think that goes back to like, one, you can't please everybody. But then also, I think like, regarding that song, it's so fascinating to hear and like read and like discuss all of what comes with it, because yeah, like, it is such a, I think, messy song in terms of the execution, but also like powerful as well, because like, you know, you listen to the meaning behind his words, and it's like, damn, dude, like, I cry when I listen to that song every single time, because it brings me back to growing up in Champaign, Illinois, and having people that would use that word in that way, that come from a culture that doesn't, or at least that didn't acknowledge trans folks, or didn't acknowledge folks who identify different sexually, right? And like, with other people, and like, would treat people bad and all this stuff, right? Like, hearing it a rap song, Kendrick Lamar, like one of the biggest rappers in the game, talking about like, hey, yeah, like, you know, this is what the story is. And like, when I had a moment at church where I had to stand up for my auntie and go, hey, like, no, we're not doing this, right? And like, it is such a, you know, again, messy, but yet like unique instance of this amount of support being given to the trans community that I think could have been executed way, way better. But I think the messiness is also like, that kind of comes back to the idea of like, you know, not many people have this where Kendrick's coming from, right? Like, not many people are even able to acknowledge it in that way. And I think messiness is part of the process. Yeah. Like, you know, you can't necessarily go from 0 to 100, right? Like, you're talking to relatives and talking to people who might not be totally supportive of trans people, right? Like, I can't get my dad to go from, you know, not supporting to then like understanding all the rules of the situation. Yeah. And I think that's him again talking to, I forget if this is a line or if this is something that we mentioned, but like him talking to the world as opposed to like a group of people, right? Like, this isn't Kendrick talking to the internet. This isn't Kendrick talking to Twitter or whatever it may be, right? This is Kendrick talking to the world. And like, the world takes a lot of this in a lot of different ways, which I think makes it, again, messy, but I think it's messy by necessity. Like, I think it has to be this messy to get that point across and to get people to understand and take that next step toward, you know, understanding what the rules are to this thing.
I mean, it's complicated, but I do think that you said that he could have done something different. I think it's more of a should have. And I think that like this, I agree with the core kind of understanding that like this is going to do more good than bad overall. And I do think that there's the education process of it all. And like, just like the normalizing of acceptance, which in a lot of different cultures is super important and all that. But it, in some ways it's like, I think that it's obvious that this isn't his story to tell. And if you're going to tell that story, you should do it the right way. And it's like, you're a smart dude, Kendrick. Yeah, like, you know what you're doing, and whether it's deliberate or not, that's where
my takeaway from that, and like, it takes into account a lot of what Blessing said, is for Kendrick, like, we live in a world where we're constantly seeing people tell us that we need to reach perfection when it comes to dealing with these issues, because anything less than perfection means you are doing it wrong. Like, you have to get it right first time. And that's the only way you can be a ally. That's the only way you can be someone who is accepting of these people, is by nailing it perfectly. And trying to convince someone to take a different stance from Kendrick's perspective by telling them they need to reach for perfection is not going to convince anyone to do anything. And I feel like from his perspective, the idea might be search for progress. And you might not nail it, but at least you're getting a bit better and you're in a better space. And I feel like this is an album where his execution isn't perfection, but it's progress. And he's speaking to a people in terms of who his music is aimed to, that can aim for progress, but they will shy away from trying at perfection. And he's also in an industry and a genre of music where people don't even try. And so him turning around being like, yo, look, at least try. You don't have to nail it. At least try. And there's something good in that. And I feel like that's a valuable thing to do, because we, in this day and age, we have people who try and do the right thing. They stumble along the way. And sadly, instead of being given the grace to be taught, hey, you should have done it like this, or these were the mistakes that you made, please learn from this and do it. It's not that. It's, you are canceled now. You had your shot. You fucked it. You are irrelevant. You're out of the spotlight. Never return again. And I feel like this is just a small counterbalance against that destructive mentality. It's a small one, but I feel like it could, in the years to come, have a big impact.
Yeah, and I think there's something important with being honest about your past and the way that you were raised and the vernacular and the hurtful vernacular of it all, and just being bluntly honest about it. That it's something that not a lot of people talk about, and it's truth. It's part of the journey. It's part of the journey for a lot of people. And I think it's important.
And Rich Spirit is a fucking bop. I cannot get over how good of a bop it is. Oh my lord. I was in my apartment just grooving alone ahead. Like, my cat is like, what are you doing, bro? I cannot get over how good that track is.
Shout out to the track Silent Hill.
The silencer, fuck it. Oh my god, dude.
Silencer, which, like, you know, at first I read Silent Hill and I was like, oh, what a coincidence, it's named after the game. But then, like, listening to the track and I'm like, you're using a silencer from a video game. I could see, like, the stretch of, like, yeah, okay, maybe it is named after a video game because he's trying to lean into that. But yeah,
maybe he knew about the Bloober Team game. Maybe he knew.
Oh yeah. Maybe
he was all connected. He was all the way to the top. Well, all right. We are just beginning to scratch the surface of this album. I'm sure we're going to be listening to it for many, many years to come. But let us know in the comments below what you think of Kendrick Lamar's Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. Until next time, I love you all. Tam, Roger, bless. Thank you for joining me.
Peace.